Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be doing something kind of fun and put together sort of our Star Trek all-pro, behind-the-scenes crew.
It's our dream team for Star Trek production.
Exactly. But before we do that, just a little bit of Discovery news. It looks like there is another cinematographer who is working on the series, according to the IMDb, which, you know, maybe not the most reliable source in the world, but whatever. Episode 3 is being shot by Darren Tiernan. I have no reason to doubt this because it is random enough that if it weren't true, it's like, why would someone put this up there?
But right. That's yeah, this isn't a name where it's like, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, he's also worked on, like, well, Designated Survivor, which Colin Holt has worked on. Mm-hmm. And he did 3 episodes of American Gods, you know, which is coming out. So there's all sorts of connections. And you can see his work on those things where he's come in, it looks like, you know, in just a couple of spots to do a couple of episodes. What's probably most noteworthy for him in terms of, you know, creating a look of a TV show or whatever is the series Stalker, which was on CBS. It was created by Kevin Williamson and stars Dylan McDermott and Maggie Q. And it lasted for 1 season, and he did all but 1 episode of that series. So and Roxanne Dawson directed an episode of that show, by the way.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
So we'll have to take a look at that. But sure. another crew member added to Discovery, Darren Tiernan. If you go to his website, darrentiernan.com, you can find a lot of, you know, work that he's done, clips from movies and TV shows, as well as commercials and stuff that he's done. I think there's a music video on there that was directed by Edgar Wright. So, you know, cool stuff. You know?
That is cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely something to check out. All right, so let's get into this. Okay.
Yeah.
So you hear about this in sports all the time, that kind of idea of like an all-pro team or whatever, you know, and the idea of, you know, who's the best at each position, you know?
Like if you're putting a football team together, American football, for any of our international listeners.
Or a soccer football, you know?
Whatever. But Bart Starr is not going to be in a soccer football discussion.
He could be.
I was going for Bart Starr. Right. Well, is there anything he couldn't do, really?
No.
I mean, honestly.
So yeah, you know, I mean, we thought that this would be fun. We've limited it to 6 key positions behind the scenes. Music, editor, production designer, cinematographer, writer, and director. And we'll just go down the list in that way and give our picks. Now, these could be people who, you know, we like because of their work on Star Trek or because of their work elsewhere. You know, maybe someone, you know, did one thing on Star Trek and then did another thing somewhere else, you know, like worked as like a minion behind the scenes and then ended up, you know, building a career. Or maybe someone who, you know, had an established career already, but, you know, back in the day they did something else, you know. You never know. So it's open to our interpretation. Let's start with music, shall we?
Oh, starting with music. Yeah, sure. Sure.
So start with music. Who's your pick for best composer?
Well, I mean, as much as I'd like to go with, you know, somebody like Cliff Eidelman or even Giacchino, honestly, the guy that I think is the musical voice of Star Trek, when I think of Star Trek music, the first person I think of is Goldsmith.
Yeah.
Even up to Nemesis, he was doing stuff that was different but sounded within the realm of the sound of Star Trek. Like, he kept, you know, pushing and prodding here and there, but it still sounded of the same voice. And so when I think of Star Trek, I think of his music. Almost similarly to the way I think of Williams when I think of Star Wars. Not quite the same, but, you know, that's sort of the vibe that I'm going for. So yeah, if I'm going to pick a Star Trek composer, it's going to be him.
Yeah, I agree. Jerry Goldsmith is my pick as well. I mean, you look at the stuff that he's done inside of Star Trek, you know, starting with Star Trek the Motion Picture, and, you know, the theme from Voyager, everything that he did with the Next Generation movies.
You cannot discount Star Trek V. That is a beautiful score.
Yeah, no, it is.
You can dislike that movie all that you want to, although you shouldn't. But I will tell you, that score for Star Trek V is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. For sure. And then you start looking at the stuff that he did outside of Star Trek, you know, whether it's Alien or Air Force One or The Omen or, you know, anything else that he did, his work on The Twilight Zone or whatever. And it's just so impressive. I mean, there are times where I listen to Goldsmith stuff and I think he's better than Williams, you know. I mean, I usually come to my senses and say, nah. But yes, Jerry Goldsmith, I mean, one of the greatest of all time.
You know, the edge I would give to Goldsmith is that, you know, for instance, you can listen sometimes to Williams and you listen to some of his stuff with Harry Potter that was being released at the same time as the prequels. And you can hear cues that are almost identical to each other. You know, there's a chase scene in Chamber of Secrets where if you really listen to the music, it's not note for note, but it sounds like the speeder chase at the opening of episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could take one and just transpose them.
Yeah.
Goldsmith, at least, he would push and he would play. Nemesis is my big shining example of that. But even when he would borrow a little bit from himself, it was between Star Trek V and First Contact. There's some similarity in the themes there.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to have a place.
Yeah.
But by and large, he was pushing and doing different stuff. Whereas, you know, if there's a knock anybody has of latter-day Williams, it's that he can borrow too heavily from himself for things. Yeah. So that's just true. To speak in support of Jerry Goldsmith as a choice.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, should we move on to editor?
Yeah, I've already got this one sealed up, and I have a feeling we're going to line up on this one too, Mike.
Okay.
Who are you picking?
Okay, I'm picking someone who did not edit anything for Star Trek.
Oh, no.
No, but they have edited for a few little movies in the past, and that person is Robert Wise.
Ooh, okay.
I mean,
okay.
The dude edited Citizen Kane, okay? I mean, that's, you know... I mean, come on.
I mean, it's the Citizen Kane of movies.
It is. Yeah. And and yes, I mean, you look at the editing in that movie. We did a whole episode of it on Commentary Track Stars, episode 100 of Commentary Track Stars for anyone who wants to go back and listen. His editing of that movie is astounding. So, yeah, I definitely would have to pick him over everyone. Even though he was a director on Star Trek, not an editor.
Okay. You know, I'm going to wind up picking an editing team. This is where I thought we would line up again.
Well, but if it weren't I think I know who you're picking, and if it weren't for Robert Wise, I would have picked them too.
I've just been enamored of their work lately, ever since I've become more aware of it. And after, you know, if anything, the thing that really blew my mind was reading the novelization for The Force Awakens and then realizing stuff that they had edited where there are traces of it, and I didn't even notice it until after I'd read the novelization. I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, they really did something there. And that's, of course, Mary Jo Markey and Marianne Brandon, who I think are wonderful editors, terrific editors. And so, yeah, I would bring them in on the project.
Yeah, and they edited, for people who don't know, they edited the two J.J. Abrams movies, Star Trek Into Darkness. And, yeah, I mean, the thing which always impressed me about them going back to, Mission Impossible 3, but even further than that, back to their work on Alias and Lost and everything, it's very precise. Like, there's nothing about it which is showy. There's nothing about it which is, like, abstract or weird or, like, anything that draws attention to itself, but just the pure... storytelling technique which is involved is like really, really impressive. It's very, very clean and precise, and it flows so nicely, and it's just like just a finely crafted piece of cinema, you know?
Right. There's not a single reaction shot or turn where you're like, yeah, you could have cut a second early. Like,
yeah.
I've never found anything to jump. Like you said, it doesn't draw attention to itself. So yeah, that's my choice.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to production designer.
Yeah.
These are the people who create the sets, you know, and on Star Trek, that's really impressive because everything is created for the most part. So, so John, who's your pick?
You know, it's very, very tempting to go with Zimmerman because you like Goldsmith. It's like, if you like the way Star Trek looks, well, he's your guy. He's your guy. But in all honesty, if I had to choose, I would probably go with Chambliss, Scott Chambliss.
Yeah.
Another guy known for Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness and the Mission Impossible work and everything. But, you know, while there were people that, you know, had the quips about the Star Trek movies with J.J. Abrams looking like an Apple store and stuff like that, I think that the production design is beautiful. I mean, like, I could turn off the sound of those movies and just look at things and enjoy what it looks like. And I fully feel that way. I mean, he did something that was out of the box. And I think that also broke open a lot of things that used to be a thing that would turn off somebody like my wife about a Star Trek movie. Is Star Trek movies up to a certain point are essentially submarine movies. Mm-hmm. They're in this enclosed set. They can't go outside. And, you know, while you might have some corridors and everything, it can feel a bit claustrophobic. Whereas, even though it's an enclosed set, it feels very open and bright. And in a way, I can plug into the thinking that he created this environment where people aren't going to get on each other's nerves, where it's not dark, where it almost seems that, like, they've created this spaceship world where you're going to be cramped inside, trapped with everybody. We're going to make it bright and happy to be in here so that you're not in a bad mood after day 365. Of sitting in here, it's like, it's dark and I can't leave and I'm really feeling cramped and I'm going to go sock somebody after I have a whiskey down in the mess hall or something like that. So yeah. Who are you going to bring in?
I think I would have to bring in Herman Zimmerman. I mean, yeah, it's cliche or whatever. And he did do like all of Star Trek for like, you know, 20 years or something. But I mean, you look at some of the stuff that he did and it's amazing. I mean, you look at the bridge of the Enterprise E or the
sure.
The bridge of Voyager or the promenade on Deep Space Nine or any of that stuff, you know, the way
that's a good consideration. The promenade is something else, isn't it?
The way that he sort of like, you know, redesigned like things which he had already built, you know, for Star Trek VI, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good. And yeah, I mean, the look of Star Trek really for like the entire Next Generation era is largely due to, you know, this one guy. So I have to give it to Zimmerman, you know.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Not a bad choice, not by any stretch.
No, no. All right. Cinematographer.
Yeah. This one's a little tough.
This is tough because there's so many good people to choose from. I mean,
yeah.
There's people who shot, you know, the guy who shot Chinatown, you know, like I mean there's a million the guy who shot Gone with the Wind, you know, I mean tons and tons of cinematographers have worked on Star Trek, you know, and all of them first class. So,
indeed.
Who if you have to narrow it down to one person, who do you pick?
Because I love his work on two movies, Star Trek VI and The Rocketeer, Hiro Narita.
That's a good choice.
I got to give it to him because of all of the Star Trek movies that I watched growing up, VI was always the one that I loved the look of the most.
Yeah.
Like I fell in love with what that movie looked like. I just adore like the color palette and just the way that the depth of field and the way that he uses. And like when you go back and you see his tricks about how he moves the camera and Valeris is standing there in the open doorway, but you don't really pay attention the first time you see it. And then when you watch it the second time, you're like, oh my gosh, there she is right there. He didn't cheat this. She was actually standing there and I just didn't pay attention. And, you know, to the way he lit, you know, the scene with Spock and Kirk dining on ashes. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. I love Star Trek VI so much, and I love the way it looks so much. That alone puts him as director of photography for me. Who's your person of choice?
Yeah, well, with Narita, I mean, he is like really impressive, you know, for all the reasons that you're saying and everything. And you know, you look at like Star Trek VI and you think like, wow, I mean, it's almost like noirish at times and everything. And
yeah,
his use of like, you know, sort of like shadows, you know, even more than his use of light, if that makes any sense, is really impressive. And well, to think that he had both Star Trek VI and The Rocketeer in the same year,
yep, you know,
that's crazy. But I honestly don't understand why after those two movies, not to mention things like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and all that stuff, mm-hmm, I have no idea why he didn't become like an A-list cinematographer, you know?
It's a good question.
He worked for years after that, but never on, you know, like massive blockbusters and stuff. And I just don't understand why. That doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
I would say that when he finds himself being cinematographer for Fortress 2 re-entry, which I saw the first Fortress in the theater, and there's a reason I've never watched Fortress 2, but I'm actually kind of curious to watch Fortress 2 now, knowing that he was the director. You know, maybe I'll give it a shot just to see what I can see that he did.
Yeah, why not? Why not? I don't know. But yes, as much as I love Hiro Narita and the look of Star Trek VI and everything, I'm going to go back and I feel like I'm cheating here because mm-hmm, if you look in like, I mean, the thing about the Star Trek, you know, movies in particular is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that enough time has passed that if you start digging around in those credits, you can find a lot of very interesting people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, just like with Star Wars, you know, you look back and you can find a little David Fincher credit on Return of the Jedi or whatever.
Yeah.
With all the ILM stuff going on and everything. And one of the people who worked at photographing visual effects on Star Trek the Motion Picture was a very young Robert Elswit.
Nice.
Who has gone on to win an Oscar for There Will Be Blood, in addition to, you know, shooting almost all of Paul Thomas Anderson's other movies, including Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Inherent Vice, Punch Drunk Love. I mean, all of that stuff just right there. But then you look at the other things that he's done in terms of like action blockbusters, everything from Tomorrow Never Dies to Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, you know, mastering the digital format with Nightcrawler, you know, I mean, all of these things, you know, it's insane.
Wow, I forgot that he did Nightcrawler. I just saw that recently.
Yeah, it's that, good, right?
Oh, well, understatement, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks great. And I'm guessing that probably some of what you're talking about with the, you know, the digital mastering and everything, you know, or mastering the whatever is probably why those night scenes looked so much better and richer than I'm used to without the annoying fake blue moonlight glow.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, he definitely took advantage of the medium. You know, you see Michael Mann. I mean, there's a few people who have really like, and, you know, he's one of them. I mean, you look at some of the other stuff that he did, Good Night and Good Luck, you know, Heist for David Mamet, you know. I mean, all of these things. It's pretty, pretty great. The Pallbearer, hey, he shot that, you know.
Hey.
So, you know, I mean, he's one of the best ever, you know. I mean, Boogie Nights, one of the best looking movies ever made, for sure. I mean, no one can top him, really. So yeah, he's...
No, that's a great choice. That's a good pull. Very good pull. Of course you know the name deep buried in the credits.
Well, I really love watching, like, old visual effects heavy movies from, like, the 80s in particular, because you look at those credits and there's a lot of names that you see where you're like, hey, you know, he's a big name now, you know, hey, she did that movie, you know, whatever it is. And it's really kind of cool to see who you might find buried deep down there. So, okay, we got two more. Now we're on to the two big ones. Next up is writer.
Yeah.
Who have you got?
It's tough. They've had some really good writers.
Yeah. For them. Well, it's definitely true in a bunch of different mediums.
They really have.
Yeah.
And we established a rule that I'm not allowed to create a dream writing team by saying, well, like what this person wrote over here and this person wrote over here and combine them into this mythical writing duo to rival everything.
Yeah.
Now, my question here, though, would be, and this isn't necessarily going to affect my decision, but what about somebody, say, who wrote a script, but they didn't get the final credit on the film? Does that person count as one of the writers that you would want or that you would allow?
I'm trying to think of who that would be.
Meyer.
Okay, but he's written other things. He wrote 4 and 6.
Yes. Oh, that's true. But if,
and regardless of that, okay, good point, it would still be fine because he has a credit in Star Trek, so you can pick anyone who has a credit in Star Trek.
No, that's right. You can pick anyone who has a credit in Star Trek. I mean, the thing is, I'm not going
to
lie.
So if you wanted to do William Shatner for his, you know, because he's written a ton of books, you know, I mean, if you're a really big fan of Tech War.
He
could also qualify for music.
As much as I have defended Star Trek V and will defend it to my dying breath and am committed to it and have a signed Cybok action figure.
Yeah.
Which I think I'm one of about a person who has that mm-hmm. in this world. I will say that Mr. Shatner isn't going to make my cut for writer.
Actually, he has a writing credit on Star Trek because he's credited with story on Star Trek V.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, you know, you could even get him for music if you wanted since, you know.
You know what? I would bring him on the soundtrack if there was an Uhura-like scene, but it was somebody singing, you know, maybe in the bar from Star Trek V instead of under the moonlight on the sands, that sort of thing. All of this is me dancing around who the writer would be because I'm having trouble deciding. Because the thing is, there's a part of me that's like, well, I'd want Nimoy on that writing staff because Nimoy came up with some great ideas. But he was definitely great with the ideas, but he doesn't seem to have like written a script from beginning to finish sort of thing.
Yeah.
At least for Star Trek. So I like him steering it or coming up with a story idea. But in terms of somebody actually writing, honestly, based on what they did with the time they had and my happiness with the product, the idea behind it and the script and everything, I would actually go with Pegg.
Oh, yeah.
With Pegg and Doug Jung. I would go with them because they were given a very short window of time and they said, come up with a Star Trek movie and you've got half the time an average writing team has. And they came up with something that is a very Star Trek movie that was funny and it was fast and it worked. And so I would go with them as my writing team.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, Shaun of the Dead, you know, Hot Fuzz, Paul, I mean, come on.
Imagine giving them a full pre-production time mm-hmm. instead of saying, we've got a script, we've got a release date, we're throwing out the script, we've still got the release date.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You know, they are working on something together now. Nobody knows what it is exactly. A lot of people are speculating that it's Star Trek 14, but, you know, they did send out a tweet with the two of them at a laptop or whatever, you know, working on something. So that's exciting.
I do. I think they're a good writing team, and I think that as much as I might be in love with, you know, the script for Star Trek 2 or... you know, any of the other Star Treks, you know, I think that they can deliver something that satisfies. So I would bring them on. Who have you got for your writer?
For me, it's someone who's kind of, you know, an obvious choice or whatever, but it's Ronald D. Moore. I mean, you know, you look at everything that he's done in Star Trek, whether it's by himself or with a co-writer like Brannon Braga, having crafted things like First Contact and Generations, not to mention all of the work that he did on Deep Space Nine. You know, all of that's amazing. But then on top of that, add Battlestar Galactica, and it's like there's no contest for me, really. I mean... I really love Nicholas Meyer. I really love Ira Stephen Bear. I really love, you know, a lot of people, you know, whether it's Harlan Ellison or whoever, you know, but
yeah.
I have to give it to Ronald D. Moore for sure. I mean, he's elite level. He's in a class, you know, unto himself in a lot of ways.
Sure.
So yeah. Yeah. He's my pick for the writer. Yeah.
Not a bad call.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, none of these are bad calls, really. I mean, they're all...
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
I think they all work pretty well.
Yeah.
So, but this brings us to our big one.
Mm-hmm.
Our big one, the big drum roll. Who is it going to be for you as director?
For me as director, I know that this is going to be a shock for people, but it's J.J. Abrams. I mean, in addition to doing...
Hold on, give me a second. I gotta cope with this choice. I'm a little overwhelmed here. This was out of left field, Mike. Okay, all right, go on.
Yes, in addition to doing, you know, Star Trek 09 and Into Darkness, he also did Mission Impossible 3. He did Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. He did Alias. He did Lost. I mean, he's done all of these things, and they've all been stellar. I mean, that's... He's made 5 movies now, and 4 of them have been number 1 on my top 10 of the year that they came out. Everything that he's not my absolute favorite director in the world right now, but he's one
of
them.
We know who that is.
Yes. I mean, he's the guy who, like, as far as like people who are making like action blockbusters today, he is the absolute best to me. His style and everything is exactly the type of thing that I'm looking for, the types of stories that he's telling, you know, the performances that he gets out of actors, everything, you know. J.J. Abrams is the best, you know.
Okay.
So who do you have?
I have to go with Meyer.
Yeah,
I have to, because the thing is, there's the guy turns out. In the Star Trek universe, he turns out 2 movies that are essentially masterpieces, and he co-writes the one that's, you know, at least in the conversation for favorite Star Trek movie for non-Trek nerds, Star Trek 4. Like, he's had a hand in what has really helped work and move along, and so I got to go with him, because I think that he has a really good, I like his sense of everything. And I think that, you know, from what I've seen with his other work as well, when you bring him a script, he knows how to, you know, punch it up and work with it. Like, he's sort of, if I were to compare him to another director that I know did a fair amount of work with, you know, a really good script and then made it just that much better, it's like Kirshner.
Yeah.
With Empire Strikes Back, where he took something that was great and he said, I know how to make this even better. And I think Meyer's that type of director. So that's why I would want him in the chair.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really argue with Meyer, you know? I mean, and it doesn't get much better than that either, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, all right. So so just going down the list again, just so that everyone, you know, has it together.
Yes.
You want to tell people who your picks are?
Yeah. Okay. So for director, Nicholas Meyer, cinematographer, Hiro Nerita, and there's an added bonus there because they worked together on Star Trek VI. So
yes,
we know
yes.
that they worked together as a good duo. I have Pegg and Jung as the writers, Goldsmith doing the score. Production designer is going to be Scott Chambliss, and my editors are going to be Marky and Brandon.
All right.
And what's your list?
Music, Jerry Goldsmith, editor, Robert Wise, production designer, Herman Zimmerman, cinematographer, Robert Elswit, writer, Ronald D. Moore, and director, J.J. Abrams. And if people, you know, want to hear more about these creators, head on over to Commentary Trek Stars right here on Trek.fm, where we have done numerous episodes and series on many of these people, including Jerry Goldsmith, Robert Wise, Simon Pegg, Doug Jung, Ronald D. Moore, J.J. Abrams, and Nicholas Meyer. So, if you want to dig deeper into their work, Commentary Trek Stars is where it's at.
Indeed it is.
All right. Well, it's been fun talking about our Star Trek creator dream teams today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You went back to like TV show land, not into the Star Trek universe, you know.
They're talking about lithium crystals and not dilithium crystals, for example.
Well, lithium crystals, man, those things obviously will catch on fire and explode.
That's good.
Earl Grey.
You are putting me in the hot seat here because, again, not that familiar with the original series. So when you brought it up as...
Boo!
Jury number three, contain yourself.
To the journey!
Let's have some tea and watch the Waltons.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Kes.
Good night, Harry. Good night, Chakotay. Good night, Joe Van Gogh.
Good night, Catherine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much for helping us out, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we'll come right up. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, gosh. Aside from being here, you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing. It's a Star Wars podcast looking at the nooks and crannies of that galaxy. You can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we get a little zany every week. And actually, speaking of the Nerd Party, I also co-host a show called Great Shot Kid, which I have a charming co-host there as we explore the work of Star Wars creators. And what do you know about that co-host, Mike?
Well, it's me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There you go.
Yeah, we talk about Star Wars over there. This week we're talking about Star Wars Celebration, the big convention that just occurred last week over in Orlando. You can also find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing a show called Soderbergh 2828, and you can find me on... my own website, commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary track stars. And you can find me on Twitter at mumbles3k. All right. Well, that's it for this week here on Stage 9. So come back next week where we will finally get to Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, starring the new captain of Star Trek Discovery, Jason Isaacs.